Hello, world. My name is Don, and you're watching Showcase for the week ending Sunday, April 17, 2022. Stop the presses. This is our Sunday show, and that means weird headlines and your live chat comments. So good to see you once again at home. And don't forget to hit that like button and subscription bell. And as always, if you're with us live, drop us a line in the live chat, and I might read it off on the air. So let's go ahead and get rolling into things with the first item on the agenda from a website called TenPlay. I haven't heard of this one before. The headline is Metaverse Company to Offer Immortality Through Live Forever Mode. No idea what that's about, but we are about to. So let's go ahead and dive into that. Let's see, here we are. So Somnium Space is developing technology where you'll be able to interact with loved ones after they die. Ooh, that's creepy. And by the way, like all of our sources for our headlines tonight are going to be posted after the live stream. We've already put up the sources from the trailer show on Friday. And the podcast version of last Sunday's headline show is up wherever podcasts are, wherever you get your podcasts. And this one's going to be up later in the week. So I forgot to do that little bit of housekeeping in the beginning intro. But anyway, Somnium Space. When CEO and founder of Somnium Space, Arthur Sychov, S-Y-C-H-O-V, I don't know how to pronounce that, Arthur Sychov, was diagnosed with an aggressive form of cancer, he began to wonder if there was some way in which his children might be able to chat with him after he was gone. He told Vice, quote, "It kind of hit me that the time I had with him was limited. Literally, if I die and I have this data collected, people can come, or my kids, they can come in and they can have a conversation with my avatar, with my movements, with my voice. You will meet the person, and you would maybe for the first 10 minutes while talking to that person, you would not know that it's actually AI. That's the goal," end quote. Yeah, this really reminds me of Man of Steel. Like, I don't know how many DC movies y'all at home are aware of, but the way that they handled Russell Crowe's version of, Marlon Brando, Superman's dad. He was just a holographic head in the original Christopher Reeve films, but the way that Man of Steel approached Jor-El in that film was basically just a full-blown, like, three-dimensional physical avatar. Like, Jor-El was able to, like, walk down a hallway. You could actually, like, engage in a real-time conversation with this computerized, virtualized representation of this consciousness of a person that's been dead for decades. So, I mean, it's fascinating on some level to see this be yet another example of Hollywood sort of being uniquely sort of foreshadowing of what real world technology is capable of. Moving on here, Live Forever would be an avatar that moves, talks, and sounds just like you. Basically, it would continue to be you long after you die, which means family and friends could still interact with you. Sychov feels that this kind of innovation for the metaverse around the human experience is worth investing in. He said, quote, "They think that it's about selling NFTs and brands selling their stuff, but it's not about that. It's much deeper," end quote. And unlike Facebook, now known as Meta, Somnium Space doesn't make money by selling people's data to advertisers. The virtual reality concept will require a concerning amount of data for it to work. He also says, quote, "That's why Facebook is so scary. It's scary to have Facebook as the leading metaverse. We are a decentralized world. We don't want to know your name. We don't care about who you are," end quote. And it's worth noting that this is basically paraphrased from a full article from Vice. They put the link in the description at the bottom there too. I mean, the personal security implications of something like this are clear. And it's this really creeps me out, quite frankly. You know, it's cool to have, you know, virtual reality technology, and it's fascinating to think of the positive applications, you know, in terms of things like medical diagnoses or finding cures for degenerative, debilitating diseases. You know, there's a lot of positive applications, but this is one of those things that really sort of reminds me of this great line that Jeff Goldblum had in the first Jurassic Park movie. I made reference to this, I think, this past Friday when we covered the Jurassic World 3 trailer, the Dominion trailer. In that first line, he was saying that all these scientists that were behind the cloning facility, they were so preoccupied with whether or not they could achieve all of this, nobody ever stopped to think if they should. And that's a valid point that now more than ever, it feels like we need to remind ourselves of, but there's just too much in it, it seems, for just not. I don't know how else to put it, but let's move on. Whatever you guys think about it, like, don't forget to drop a line in the comment section. And if you're with me live right now, feel free to do the same there. And I might incorporate that into my reactions here. And we'll see if we can build a conversation from that. This is from CNN. Next item on the agenda, traveler told TSA, what was it? Transportation Security Administration, I think is what that stands for. He had no idea a sword was concealed in his cane. Ooh, this is something right out of the Kingsman movies right here. Hang on a second. Let me go ahead and look into this. This is from CNN Travel, last updated 7 days ago, exactly. Transportation Security Administration officials at Boston's Logan International Airport discovered a long blade inside a traveler's cane on Tuesday. TSA spokesperson Dan Velez said in a tweet that the man said he had no idea the blade was in there. After being questioned by Massachusetts State Police, the man surrendered the cane and was cleared to continue his travels. It's not uncommon for blades to be concealed in seemingly ordinary objects. On Thursday, a passenger attempted to make it through airport security with a dagger concealed in a hairbrush handle at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, according to a tweet from TSA spokesperson Lisa Farbstein. Now, it's really easy to just look at this as something that's, hey, somebody just took, you know, prop design in the movies way too seriously. But, like, you know, it's, how do you not know this? How do you not know the full capabilities of something? Like, how was this obtained? Like, hang on a second, let me try to find some more information. Okay, I guess that's where the story kind of ends here. The last part is, some carry-on items may be prohibited even if they appear not to be like a cane with a hidden sword, the TSA says on its website. That's the end of it. It's, man, this is crazy though. Like, I can't even, I had no idea that there was something like that, like, actually in the real world. I'm so used to seeing that in as a movie prop, because we've had three Kingsman movies out already. And if I remember right, they're working on the next one, the next one in modern day, because the last one was a prequel for that took place during World War I. But yeah, it looks like there's going to be a lot more coming down the pipe. Let's go ahead and move on. This is from Distractify. A viral TikTok is claiming that a mermaid washed up on the coast of Kenya. Okay, let's take a look at that. okay, so at this point, it's no surprise that another conspiracy is making the rounds on TikTok. It seems like there's a new one at least once a week. This time there's a video which has gotten over 7 million views in just one day, making viewers question the possibility of a mermaid in Ukunda, which is a town in Kenya, U-K-U-N-D-A. I'm not sure how else to pronounce that, Ukunda. But is it true? Whether or not there's actually a mermaid in Kenya or anywhere at all is still up for debate. However, in April 2022, a TikTok user named Skinfluence by MSK posted a video they have been tagged in, giving their commentary about this possibility. I'm hoping that there is an embedded, yep, there it is. There's the embedded video. Okay, let's take a closer look at this. Here we are. All right.
We need to talk about this mermaid video now. So I have been tagged and been sent this video a lot over the last couple of days, and I don't know what to think about it. To be honest, the video frightens me. At first, I thought it was probably just a hoax, but the more I watch it, and a lot of people are saying this footage is the most believable footage to show the existence of mermaids.
Get to it.
This footage was taken in Kenya. This creature was supposed to have washed up on the beach in Kenya, and all these people are recording it. And a lot of people from the area have been posting on social media saying that this was very much real. It's a mermaid. I don't know what to believe. Apparently the government is trying to hush them up, which doesn't surprise me at all. But yeah, I want to know what you guys think. Trigger warning, it is quite, like, frightening to see. So yeah, watch it. Let me know what you think and follow me, because we have so much more we need to discuss.
Okay, all right. Anyway. Okay, that's the tale. Pan the camera up. What do we got? Oh, what? You got like a little, the last possible, we got like one frame of that. I had no idea that was
We need to talk about.
Oh shoot, and there's no, There's no progress bar on it. I can't get to the very end of it. Oh, brother. Jeez. Let me see. The same day that the first video was posted, Skinfluenced by MSK posted a duet of what looks to be another video of the same mermaid. Here we see the arms of the body move along with the fins, and it's now laying in a pool of blood. In the comments section of this video, viewers still aren't convinced that what they're looking at is a real mermaid. Okay, here we are. Here's an extreme close-up here. I don't know. I don't know about that. This is mermaid, Kenyan mermaid footage part two. This is another video that's on TikTok. The links to all this are going to be in the description below. I'm not sure if we should play this. This seems to be something that can be kind of filtered under the idea of extreme content, technically. Possibly, I'm not sure. The subtext here you can see says, apparently you can see the gills in this creature's neck moving in and out. In one comment, a user points out they can hear gagging. To them and others, it looks like a child in a huge fish's mouth. Some comments point out they see a fish's head around a person's waist, and all this is a video of an unfortunate accident where a child was almost eaten alive. Oh my God. I'm going to file this under disturbing and just basically put that away. Those of you who are like able to stomach the full link, let us know in the comments, like, if that's what do you think, if that's real. I don't think that's real. My first indicator is just basically, first of all, how much time was spent sort of in the setup to the piece. You know, like, that was way too much time and effort, you know, trying to convince us that this was real and there was some sort of a conspiracy of some kind. I don't know. It kind of reeks to me, but I don't know. What do you think? Drop a comment in the description and let us know. This is from UPI. Blind driver breaks speed record in New Mexico. Okay. Let's see. Okay. A race car driver who was blinded in an accident 10 years ago broke a Guinness World Record by driving a customized cat at a speed of 211 miles per hour. I think that was a typo, customized car. I don't think this person would break a land speed record to the point of winding up in Guinness by driving construction equipment. Like, I don't know. I don't think that's the sort of thing that's possible necessarily. Dan Parker took to the track at Spaceport America in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. That's a real place? Wow. In his customized Corvette and broke the Guinness World Record for fastest speed for a car driven blindfolded. I think that needs to be in its own category. He wasn't blindfolded. He's medically blind. Like, he's legally blind. I don't think you can put that in the same category there. Parker reached a top speed of 211.043 miles per hour, beating the previous record of 200.51 miles per hour. Parker, who achieved the record on the 10-year anniversary of the day he was blinded in a racing accident, used an audio guidance system to help him control the vehicle during his attempt. The record attempt was part of the National Federation of the Blind's Blind Driver Challenge. Wait, so this was a thing? This was a sanctioned, sponsored stunt of some kind that wound up actually making it into the Guinness record. Wow. there is a lot to unpack here. I guess just in the interest of time, let's just go ahead and put this in the category of wow. This looks like an embedded video is there, but it's not showing up on this browser. Maybe it will, like, for those of you at home who click on the link in the description below after it's posted, because we ran out of time to do that earlier. Let's see. Okay, here we are. So here's a quote here. We have not only demonstrated that a blind person can operate a vehicle safely, but that we can do it at over 200 miles per hour. We hope the success inspires blind people and shows the world the potential of modern technology like self-driving cars to help the blind break barriers in everyday mobility and beyond. Yeah, but see, when you get into these kinds of conversations about the potential impacts, the potential positive societal and cultural impacts of more autonomous technology, self-driving technology, especially self-driving technology, it's really easy to sort of sweep under the rug or just deliberately sidestep the risks that are involved with having self-driving technology on the road more and more, especially in cases where the person, the driver, has no choice but to use self-driving because for one reason or another, they can't be in control behind the wheel completely on their own. They're going to need some kind of electronic assistance. And I mean, those of you who saw the 8th Fast and Furious film, I know it's a Hollywood example, but it's a good go-to. That's, there's a shining example of what can happen when self-driving cars go completely out of control. Because like, for it to be truly autonomous, you're going to have to give access to some sort of grid, some kind of internet. And it's like, anything that comes into contact with the internet is theoretically at risk of some sort of hacking and control and influence. And lives are at stake when you do, when you use autonomous self-driving technology. You know, I don't think I would ever get a self-driving car personally. That's just speaking for myself here. But I don't know. Those of you at home, if you're more comfortable with that technology, hey, let me know if I'm overthinking it. Shoot, hit us up. Let's go ahead and move on. Next item on the docket. Here we go. This is from Huffington Post. Protester tries to glue herself to court during an NBA game. How'd I miss this? Let's see. This was posted 4 days ago. Animal activist Alicia Centurio, trending as hashtag glue girl, laughed about her stunt afterward, even though she had a serious motive. Okay, a woman protesting the mass killing of chickens tried to glue herself to a basketball court Tuesday during a play-in game between the host Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Clippers, while TNT announcers Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller tried to figure out what was going on as personnel surrounded the protester near the baseline. Sideline reporter Allie LaForest said the interloper tried to glue herself to the floor and was resisting security. The protester left a white handprint on the hardwood, one photo showed. The animal rights group Direct Action Everywhere confirmed the motive in a news release identifying the activist as Alicia Centurio. Centurio wrote a t-shirt saying, "Glenn Taylor roasts animals alive to protest the mass killing of chickens amid an avian flu outbreak on Timberwolves owner Glenn Taylor's Iowa egg farm," according to a release. That's why she was at that game. The group alleged the suffocation method used to kill the birds was inhumane and against state law. Wow. There's a video here. Oh, it's an embedded Twitter video. Yeah, it's not showing up in here, unfortunately. Let me see if I can. Here's a Twitter link. You can try and open that up in a different tab and see if that pulls it in okay. It might not work, but it's worth a shot. Let me see here. Okay, there you go. It's working here. All right, here's the Twitter version.
Fallen, a arena worker has fallen at the other end, and you can see right now, not sure if she fainted or fell. But
wait a minute, let me rewind that again. Hang on 1 second.
Somebody has fallen, a arena worker has fallen at the other end, and you can see right now.
They think she's staff.
Not sure if
yeah,
she's
no, that ain't staff.
But they are assisting her. And out she goes. You know, I say it's an arena worker. It may have been somebody else.
Yeah, no, I don't. This is going to go on from there. Wow, 750,000 views in the last week on Twitter. Okay, well, there are better ways to advocate animal rights than doing that. There are. You can make the argument for that. I wouldn't have done that necessarily, but in fact, I know I wouldn't have done that. But that's just me. Man, this is to the point where this person has a trending hashtag about herself. That's crazy. See, and that's another reason why not to do this, because we live in such an inherently social media over-obsessed age. It's like the last thing that you want if you have a serious goal in mind and you're not just an attention seeker looking to sort of, you know, create some sort of a platform for yourself just for the sake of it, like a streaker running across the field of a soccer game, you know, during the World Cup or whatever, or sorry, a football game during the World Cup, right? It's like, you don't want to overshadow your cause. You don't want to basically distract from your own message. And by doing stunts like this, you know, in a venue like that, yeah, you're getting more eyeballs, but it's so easy to lose sight of what the point of you even being there is. And you're risking arrest. You're risking like all sorts of mess on the heels of that. You know, that's a shake in my head moment right there. I got to say, at least for me personally. Let's move on to the next topic. Let's see. Whoops. Sorry, one moment. Oh, sorry. We have some comments right now on YouTube. Thanks so much for joining us live via our YouTube channel right now. We have a couple comments. One person says, not much of a view of the creature in that video. She talked too much and gave us practically nothing. Looked mighty fake to me. Yeah, thank you. And then this is, I guess, in reference to the second video, speed driving while blind. Why? Yeah, thank you. It's one of those things that's like, okay, you want to be a positive example for the community, you know, the disabled, that facet of the larger disabled community. But it's, I don't know that that was necessary. But, you know, anyway, all right, let's move on. Next item on the docket is from UPI. Driverless car. Naturally. Driverless car pulled over by police in San Francisco. I was literally just talking about this like 5-10 minutes ago here. An unusual traffic stop was caught on camera in San Francisco when police pulled over a car that turned out to be completely unoccupied. The San Francisco Police Department confirmed officers stopped the vehicle in the Richmond District when it was observed driving after dark without its headlights activated. A video captured by a witness shows officers approaching the car after it pulled over and expressing surprise to find it empty. This is an embedded YouTube video attached here. Let me see if I can play this for us really quickly.
We are getting new details about a viral video showing a self-driving car taking off after being pulled over. KTVU's Christian Captain joined us.
Wow, it really did book it.
Traffic stop for driving without headlights at night.
Yeah, it may have started out as a routine traffic stop, but when the officer got to that vehicle, looked inside and saw that there was nobody there, that routine traffic stop took a very strange turn.
Ain't nobody in it.
San Francisco police confirmed the unusual traffic stop happened April 1st on Clement Street in San Francisco's Richmond District. Initially, an officer looked inside the crew's self-driving vehicle and saw there was no one inside. After reaching for the door, he began walking back to his patrol car. At that point, the car begins to drive away through an intersection before stopping again and remaining on scene. Officers initially pulled the self-driving crew's car over for not having its headlights on while driving after 10 p.m.
Can the crew's vehicle pick up on emergency lights and sirens from our vehicles?
Yes, Floyd, a crew's AV can. Each crew's vehicle is uniquely designed to react to first responders.
Cruise has a YouTube video instructing first responders how to approach and interact with driverless cars.
But once the crew's AV is stopped, how does a first responder know that it won't drive away?
When a first responder arrives, they should immediately contact the crew's critical response line.
A police source confirms the officer seen interacting with the vehicle called the number provided by Cruise, as well as seeing if he could turn the headlights on himself. In an email, Cruise confirms the vehicle is part of its driverless ride-hail service, which only operates at night between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. The headlights, the company says, were off due to a human error, and Cruise said...
Okay. Last part.
As the issue has been fixed.
Yeah. Okay. Let's stop it there. You know, that's another thing. Your business is set up in a way that you can sort of see the purpose behind it. You know, this is San Francisco. It's a service that's designed to sort of like help people navigate the roads safely. You know, let's say after a long night of like partying or at the bar or something, it's to keep potential inebriated driving, drunk driving risks off the road. By having an extra source of transportation accessible quickly to make sure that the roads remain safe from impaired driving. Yes, I get it, 100%. Holy crap, this is a case study though of like, you know, thank goodness when the car, you'll notice, let me go ahead and rewind the, I don't have to rewind it actually, y'all saw it already. The vehicle, when it started driving again, you can see that it crossed through a whole intersection that luckily it had the green light. The autonomous car that was driving away, it had the right of way in that moment. Fortunately, like imagine if this footage had gone the other way. The autonomous car is driving through an intersection, running against a red light. Things are going to get T-boned from somebody else who doesn't see that little smart car coming, you know, thinking that they have the right of way because the light's green from their perspective. I mean, what if there was somebody in the autonomous car who's not in control, you know? I mean, and they haven't been instructed to get out of the vehicle yet, so they're still in. The cop walks away and the car starts driving. The car is essentially kidnapping a person at this point. through a red light. Wham. There's so many ways that this could have gone so far worse. And this really kind of underscores my previous point about making sure that we really have thought through the ramifications of introducing this much autonomous technology, especially when it comes to potentially life and death circumstances where there's supposed to be minimal human impact, minimal human interaction with what it takes to operate one of these things. This is really unsettling to me. There's a comment. I wonder who they wrote the ticket to, the car company. I mean, it stands to reason. I mean, well, we don't know, or at least I didn't know. I was trying to move on. Like, they may have mentioned that in the rest of the story, but we'll have the link in the description down below at the end of this video. After this video has wrapped, I'll go back in and put it in there as well. So if you want to look into this any further, like, feel free. After liking and subscribing, of course. Here we go. So next item is from Huffington Post. We're about halfway through here. Hungry Javelina gets stuck in car, goes for a ride in Arizona. What is a Javelina? Javelina? That sounds like a brand of some sort, honestly. Either a brand or like an Olympic sport tool, like a javelin, just with an extra vowel at the end. Like, I don't know what that is. I'm guessing it's a relative of the pig family, judging by this picture. The pig-like creature jumped in to get a bag of Cheetos, only to be trapped when the hatch closed. Okay, deputies in Yavapai County responded to a call last week in Cornville, a community 10 miles, 16 kilometers south of Sedona, about a javelina stuck in a Subaru station wagon. Javelinas are pig-like animals that are native to desert environments. After speaking with the car's owner and other residents, they determined the car's hatchback, I guess they meant the rear hatch of the vehicle, have been left open overnight. The javelina jumped in to get a bag of Cheetos. The hatch then closed, trapping the animal inside. Authorities say the javelina ripped off a portion of the dashboard and the inside of a door in an attempt to escape. The animal then managed to knock the car into neutral, causing it to roll down the driveway and across the street. Oh man, the Subaru came to a rest and the javelina was not injured. A deputy opened the hatch and the javelina was able to run back into the wilderness. Wow. So I guess this, now I'm reminded of a line from, Jamie Foxx has this great line in No Way Home, the last Spider-Man films. He's talking to Sandman about like their respective origins in the franchise. And he says this line to the effect of, got to be careful where you fall. Here it's like, be careful where you forage. Cause like this is one of those things that, man, as long as the animal's okay. And, you know, presumably the vehicle had sustained what comparatively speaking was minimal damage by the time they actually got to the vehicle and pulled the animal out. Okay. So that's crazy. All right, let's move on. Let's see. We're just after the bottom of the hour right now. Here we are. World's first computer, here's one that's up my alley, in my neck of the woods. World's first computer, Antikythera. Antikythera? The Antikythera mechanism started up in 178 BC. Wow. Okay. Wow. So you're dealing with technology that's claims to be older, like predates the year zero. Like that right there. Let's just start there. What is this pop up? Get out of my face, please. Weirdo. The mysterious Antikythera mechanism, thought by some to be the world's first computer. Yep, that's this thing right here, I guess. You could say that might be like a primitive sort of hard drive type of thing. Later, get out of my face. This website is popping up some weird little pop-ups there. Yeah, that looks like a hard drive. What looks like sort of like mechanisms for like what might be a spinning plate sort of thing, like a very, very primitive hard drive of some kind. Let's see, it's a reconstruction made in the 70s. But if it uses that same sort of like mechanism structure, like the gears you can see like the teeth, finely ground teeth in the internal gears of it. Oh, we have somebody new in the room here. Hang on 1 second. Hey, Raina, can you hear me? Uh-oh, hang on. We're connecting her audio right now. There you are. Hey, hey. Raina, looking good. How you doing tonight?
Good. Good, good.
Cool, cool. Can you fix the orientation on your... There we go. There we go. Cool. There we go.
Turn it this way. I have to turn it this way.
Uh-oh.
1 second. 1 second.
All right. Technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen. Please stand by. There we are. Welcome, welcome. So you look really nice today. How are you feeling? What's going on?
Oh, I'm feeling okay. Currently getting ready to, well, I was, I'm basically ready now, but getting ready to head out to dinner for my cousin's 25th birthday.
Ooh, nice. Nice. Soon. Well, let's make sure you have lots of interesting talking points for that conversation over right. dinner then. Right?
Yes, I'll definitely leave here with some, always with weird news, always.
There you go, cool. So, and interesting timing, I was just in the process of explaining to the audience at home about apparently the world's first computer, supposedly predating the year zero, the year 178 BC. exactly.
Computer?
Or a reasonable facsimile. It says, this is from LifeScience.com, the mysterious Antikythera mechanism, Antikythera, thought by some to be the world's first computer, was first started up on December 22nd, 178 BC, archaeologists have now found, discovered by sponge divers in a Roman-era shipwreck near the Greek island of Antikythera in 1901, the elaborate ancient computer, which looks like a shoebox-sized contraption with gears and dials that have numerous tiny inscriptions written on them, could predict eclipses and determine when various athletic games took place, among other functions. Wow.
I definitely want to see a photo.
This is the photo. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Are you able to see
this right now? There we go. I see it now.
Okay.
Okay.
So this is a reconstruction that was made in the 70s. This isn't the real thing, but I mean, I just can't help but wonder, you know, like, can you tweet with this? Like, can you at least, will it run Crysis? That's what I got to wonder as a gamer. You know what I mean? This is all dumb jokes. I know.
But yes, I wonder what does it do? What are its functions?
Well, the story was talking about how like the original computer could be used to sort of calculate computer. We're going to call it that here. It was used to calculate something to do with astronomy. Let me see.
Okay.
Over the years, it could predict eclipses and determine when various athletic games took place. So there you go. Over the years, researchers have painstakingly pieced together the many fragments to figure out how it was created and how it would have been used 2,000 or so years ago. A team of scientists have determined that turn-on date, detailing their findings online March 28 in an online journal where research can be uploaded before peer review. However, a scientist not affiliated with the study cast doubt on this claim, telling Life Science the start date was probably in 204 BC. Okay, so they were off by a few years. Nobody's disputing, at least this item, whether or not this is true.
They're putting that in a museum, right?
Yeah, this is a, let's see. It doesn't say where this...
What museum has it, or...
It just said the context under the picture says the 1970s reconstruction was designed by and that's it. It doesn't say where this photo was taken place. So I'm not sure here. But extra Googling will probably bring that up. Those of you who might be interested in this, look it up. Antikythera mechanism. There's the word on screen for you. Antikythera. So there you go. That's definitely something to look into there. Yeah, I might have to look that up later. Anyway, let's move on. Let's see. Try to get a few more topics in before the top of the hour. We have about 20 minutes left here, give or take.
I'm so late. Did you explain the baby situation already?
I did not. Yeah, you want to go ahead and tell the audience? I wasn't sure you'd be able to make it, so I figured it wouldn't do any good to but go ahead.
So I'm also babysitting. So I have my godsons with me today, but they're much smaller than my actual children. So there's babies are napping, babies are crawling. It's just baby life here.
Okay.
So it sounds like I'm diaper changing today. I haven't diaper changed in 9 years. So.
Wow. So it doesn't sound like you need a Paramount Plus subscription at this point. You have like a full like Rugrats remake happening right now is what it sounds like. If I understand. Yeah.
100%. So if you hear a baby in the background, everybody, or babies, this is the case today.
Yeah. Noted. Let's see if we can move through this as quickly as possible. Maybe we can, if we get to the bottom of this or the top of this feed here with topics, maybe we can shut down a little bit early. Let's see. This is again from Huffington Post. Uh-oh. Raina, I lost your camera. Oh, well, I guess it's probably the baby's needing something anyway. It's okay. She's still in the room. I can still see that she's still in the room. We'll get her back in momentarily, hopefully. Moving on. Next topic is from Huffington Post. Scientists figure out how vampire bats got a taste for blood. Wow. Okay. Let's see. They compared the genome of common vampire bats to 26 other bat species and identified 13 genes that are missing or no longer work in vampire bats. Over the years, those gene tweaks helped them adapt to a blood diet rich in iron and protein, but with minimal fats or carbohydrates, the researchers reported Friday in the journal Science Advances. The bats live in South and Central America and are basically living Draculas. Wow. About 3 inches long with a wingspan of 7 inches, the bats bite and then lap up blood from livestock or other animals at night. Wow. Okay. So, Raina, your thoughts on vampire bats?
You know what's crazy? I've never thought about why they like suck blood or need blood or whatever. I've never thought about that. But I also kind of thought it was a myth. I don't know where that came from. I thought it was like some type of like weird myth that somehow vampires and bats, and bats that are vampires, bats want to suck blood or whatever the case and all this stuff. But I don't know. I thought it was a myth. I didn't know that.
Maybe that combined with some apparently defunct genes of some kind. I don't know like what else to really sort of like write that off as. Let me see.
I'm actually getting some things to look up today, stepping into weird news, because I honestly didn't think that was a thing.
Well, there you go, and you're welcome. Let's see. A bat researcher at Tulane University who was not involved in the study says, quote, blood is a terrible food source. Hannah Kim Frank is her name. It's totally bizarre and amazing that vampire bats can survive on blood. They are really weird, even among bats, end quote. So skipping ahead a little bit in the story, with such a low calorie diet, vampire bats can't go along without a meal. In a pinch, well-fed ones will regurgitate their food to share with a starving neighbor. They seem to keep track of who has helped them in the past, noting that vampire bats have complex social relationships. Wow, that's above and beyond like what we've heard of like birds doing with their young, like, you know, regurgitating. Enjoy your meal, those of you who are having Sunday dinner right
it's
now.
So and usually I'm not grossed out, but something about this is like weirding me out. It's like,
okay, let's probably move on from this. Y'all get the gist of it.
That's pretty crazy. I'm going to look that up. That's wild. I need to see this in action. I'm probably going to like watch it.
Not while you're eating dinner with your friend at her birthday party. That's not.
I know. I'm going to find it and watch it, because this reminds me, there's I like weird stuff like this. But I want to see this. I need to look up something about bats and like watch it happen. There's these things, and I forgot what it's called. They're like, there was this one animal thing that I was watching. And there's these things that like they get into another animal's body, and then they like parasite, and they control your brain.
And I heard about that.
The animal's like paralyzed. It's well aware, it's fully aware that it's alive and in a certain space, but has no control. It's no longer in control of its body. It's just there. Body is paralyzed, brain is operating until like it dies, and the parasite like makes a home inside of the animal, and then it like has babies in there and like lays eggs and stuff inside of the animals, and then the babies come out of it. It's like the weirdest thing I ever seen. It was so crazy.
I've actually heard of that. I don't know if we're thinking of the same thing, but there's this thing called the Cordyceps fungus. It's the main plot point of the video game series Last of Us on PlayStation 4. It's a real fungus that was it's explained in the game franchise as a mutation of the Cordyceps fungus, but it's actually it's able to control and influence insects like ants. I've seen a lot of stuff about the Cordyceps fungus in connection with ants in particular. But in the games, there's a crazy mutation that affects humans and has that exact same effect about how you're alive, but not really. You're aware, but not really. And you're not in control of your actions at all. Like you're almost like an autonomous vehicle that starts driving away.
Mm-hmm. And you get pulled over by the feet. And like, I watched it happen in this documentary. It was like so gross and crazy and freaky weird. Mm-hmm. It was awesome though.
Yeah. It's insane. We have a comment on Instagram. I think Don and I have the same pair of glasses. Great minds sharp alike, I guess. I don't know what to say. Did you have good taste in glasses, sir? Let's move on. Next item on the docket. This is from The Mirror, which is a UK-based publication we have sourced from a few times in the past. Brain Machine Telescope. Brain Machine. Oh no, here we go. More brain-related stuff. Could detect radio signals from ancient aliens by 2030. Okay, so we have 8 years of humans being alone in the universe left. Enjoy them while you can. Is the takeaway from that particular headline's wording. A brand new brain-powered telescope could hear distant radio signals originating from alien civilizations as soon as 2030. A giant radio telescope will soon begin scanning the night sky for alien signals, and it will be powered by a prototype brain. The Square Kilometer Array, SKA, will boast a massive 197 dishes and 130,000 antennas located across South Africa and Australia. It is designed to pick up radio signals, both natural and alien-made, that current telescopes cannot detect. Construction began last year ahead of its 2025 opening, and researchers are developing the software needed to power it. So yeah, that's why they're putting the timeline that far out in the future. Okay, so let's go ahead and examine the premise of this article. Raina, where are you at with, like, are we alone in the universe? Let's start there. Do you believe in
aliens? We're not. I believe there was life in the universe before we were here, but that's neither here nor there. Super deep subject, but no, not alone here at all.
So do you think it's worth contacting aliens with technology like this, or do you think we're inviting our own destruction?
No, leave them alone. Leave them alone. I think human nature is to discover things, and we have a thing about just not letting things be, whether it be animals, flowers, or even air. And I think that, you know, there's no need to. I don't even want to know the chaos that involves. I don't even want to think about the chaos that I think that involves. But I think some things need to be left alone without like human influence or discovery.
So let sleeping extraterrestrial life forms lie, I think is the vibe that I'm getting from you here. Did you ever see this Jodie Foster film from the 90s called Contact?
I feel like I have. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. I remember only bits and pieces of it, but when I look at this image, like, that's what that reminds me, because the box art or the movie poster from that was this gigantic satellite dish that looked like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the context of the film, like, you know that this is the technology that they built up to reach out to intelligent life and elsewhere in the universe. And it's like,
right.
Yeah. I mean, don't we have problems here on Earth to deal with first? It's like, didn't Michael Jackson, for all that he did, you can debate that, didn't he like tell us to start with the man in the mirror? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
The last thing we need to be doing.
Sorry?
We need to work on ourselves. Okay, no, the last thing, exactly that. I don't believe that there's any reason. I don't know why there's still this fixation on. Probably because it's kind of the one things that humans haven't been able to really get their hands on. There's still a fixation about it because it hasn't really been able to be touched and figured out. It's still a conspiracy theory. There's still a bunch of conspiracy theories and it's not been quite figured out yet.
Well,
you know, like I said, human nature, we just have this thing about discovery and opening up Pandora's box, and it's like, a lot of stuff.
When the Large Hadron Collider was put out like 10 years ago, something basically, 10, 15 years ago, something like that, there were a lot of dissenting voices that were really sort of anxious about that too. Like, if you're the process, the means by which you're trying to investigate and discover the God particle could wind up resulting in a runaway chain reaction of atomic fusion or something that could wind up destroying the planet or something. So it's one of those, going back to your comment about Pandora's box, the unforeseen consequences of human scientific exploration.
Yep. Every time, almost every time, with different stuff. So
yeah, this is bizarre. Hopefully we'll cooler heads have the capacity to prevail in terms of like making sure we have the right type of oversight in hand for that. Let me see here. Are you able to see things? See this? Or is this still on the news feed where you're at right now? I mean, the image of the satellite dishes. Are you still looking at the satellite dishes on your end?
I don't see them anymore.
Okay, so I guess we should be fine then. I'm trying to figure out, sorry, everybody, there's a delay in between the versions that I'm seeing on my computer and then the version to talk to Raina right now and you guys, because there's two different devices and like the image hasn't caught up yet on the other one, what I'm seeing over here. So technology logistics, what can I say?
Yes. And by the way, as I said earlier, while this is happening, I don't see it anymore. To anybody watching, viewers, definitely, if you haven't heard of or seen any of this stuff, I encourage you to dive deeper into it. If it matters to you or if it's an interesting topic, dive deeper into it. Do your research, you know, hit the good old Google and, expand the mind. I am I'm a huge conspiracy theorist, and I'm like, I was talking to my aunt the other day about something, and we were talking about like Googling things and then going down this rabbit hole. Sometimes I do that for days, and sometimes it's good and productive, and other times I'm just like, okay, you got to get off this subject. But I do it all the time. But you'd be surprised a lot of stuff that you find out and that you learn and that you become more interested in. So yeah.
It's a valid idea to want to learn more about the world in which you occupy and your role within it. It's just that we have yet to really sort of put in place very many implied guardrails. Clearly defined guardrails. A lot of the time it is implied anyway, but to clearly define them as a standard, a set of regulations, for lack of a better way to put it, that we all know not to breach, you know, whether you understand the logic behind not doing it or not, we all kind of agree on these rules. So it's I feel like that needs to be sort of the first step in sort of establishing, I guess we can call it, responsible scientific exploration. You know, we need to make sure that we have a continually improving and carefully and responsibly thought through set of guidelines for things like that, especially when we're talking about things like the origins of life in the universe or contacting alien species when we have the climate change left and right every day. It's like, what are we doing? You know, anyway, we're getting sidetracked.
Yeah, I'm like, it's so funny because I'm focusing on you, but I have so many things going on. I hear my godson's in there and I'm checking in on them periodically. My cat is right here cleaning herself like a crazy person. The only calm person here right now is my dog. And that's very rare. He's not even barking at anybody.
Wow. Well, in that case, let's spend most of this last 9 minutes before the top of the hour, try to get some more interesting topics here on the record. Once again, thanks so much to those of you at home who are watching us on YouTube or live on Instagram at Weekend Showcase, or listening along with us on the audio podcast version. We're going to be putting this out wherever your podcasts are downloaded. Links for all that is in the description, as per usual. Let's move on. We're going to try to get a couple more topics done before we're done. Starting with this. Watch 24 hours of true crime documentaries for $2,400.
What does it say? Job.
Uh-oh. I guess Tommy Pickles over there needs some attention, it sounds like. Yeah, I think Raina's got to do some babysitting for now. It's okay. We'll bring her back in shortly. Meanwhile, let's go ahead and take a look at this. Let's see. Are you a true crime doco nerd? Doco, short documentary. I've never heard that shorthand abbreviation in my life. I don't know. That doesn't sound like a word. Magellan TV has launched its third annual, they've done this before, its third annual True Crime Watch Dream Job, offering $2,400 to watch 24 hours of documentaries and report on the experience. The winning candidate will also get a year's free subscription to Magellan TV, okay, after watching the true crime documentaries over a 48-hour period. They would have to document the experience on social media as they watched. Magellan TV said on its website, quote, our ideal candidate lives for true crime. They can handle the most menacing serial killer, the goriest details, and don't flinch at the chilling paranormal. Along with watching, they'll be documenting their true crime all night or on social media, so everyone will see if they can hear me right now.
One I can moment. Hear you still.
Okay. Hang on, my master computer is reconnecting to the room right now. Okay, there we are. Okay, I think we're back up again. There we go. Okay, I don't know what just happened. My computer that's running the broadcast kind of disconnected and reconnected in such a way that I guess I need to reconnect my capture card to make sure that y'all can see what's going on properly. Hang on one moment. Let's see here. Sorry, buddy, stand by. I'm going to go ahead and get this for us right now. There we are. Okay, Raina, are you still there?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Sorry about that, everybody. We'll fix this in post. Let's see. So we're talking about Magellan TV, which is a platform I've never heard of. It's a premium service, basically. They're giving away $2,400 and a year subscription to itself to watch nothing but true crime documentaries for 48 hours.
I would do it.
Hold on.
It's
24 hours of documentaries over a 48 hour. So saying you would do it, Raina?
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. We can't see you. We have a YouTube comment. Can't see you. Is your camera on? Oh, there you are. Oh, hello.
Now it is.
hello.
Yes, look at little baby real quick. Boop. So, I had to pick him up for a second. He saw me. He saw my little foot. And then he was just like, whoa, get back here. So, he's a cutie. 6 months. So, I would definitely do it. I love crime shows. One of my favorite things to do was to watch crime shows for a long time. Murder mysteries. I still do whenever I get the chance, but I would do it.
Okay. Let me see. This thing is missing the picture from the, I'm sorry, everybody. This thing is missing the picture in the YouTube version. Let me try and connect it one more time. Hang on one second. Oh goodness. We have time for like maybe two more topics and then we got to shut this down here. Let's see. Oh, YouTube comment, cute baby.
Thank you. He's a sweetheart.
There we are.
Super sweet. Okay. Almost just spit up on me, but he didn't get me.
Well, that's good. All right, let's see. Whoops, here we go. I'm not sure why this is not showing the camera perspective properly on YouTube. That is very strange. Okay, well, tell you what, we have the version that's being locally recorded. We can pull stuff from that separately. I don't know why this isn't pushing.
Okay, baby, hold on.
We'll have to troubleshoot that at a later time. But anyway, so Raina, was there anything else you wanted to say about this? You said you would do this, watch 24 hours of true crime over the course of 2 days.
Yeah, that's all I really have to say about it. I would do it.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I could watch maybe six of that. Maybe 6 hours. Like you're not gonna pay me enough to watch 24 hours straight of that.
I would do it. It's 24 hours. We do a lot of other nonsense in 24 hours in a day. So I mean,
yeah. Well, that's true too. let's move on. Next item, and then we gotta try and start winding down. Let's see here. Before we even get to that, I guess while we load this up, actually, hang on, I may be about to. Yep, there it is right now. I thought I had more time. Okay, here we go. I guess we can make this the last one for now. This is from UPI again. Alberta hockey game lasts 261 hours, breaks world record.
What is it?
This is an This is a hockey game in Alberta, Canada, that lasted 261 hours. Hold on one second. Let me take a look at this.
A hockey game that lasted 261 hours.
So let me crunch some numbers really quickly. 261 hours divided by 24. This is 10.875 days. A hockey game that lasted almost 11 days continuously. Wow. Yeah, let's take a closer look at that really quickly. So the Hockey Marathon for the Kids event at the Chestermere Recreation Center in Chestermere, Alberta. Why do I keep saying Alberta? Chestermere, Alberta. I don't know. That's weird. Came to a close Monday evening after 261 hours of hockey, which began March 31. The players earned the Guinness World Record for the longest game of hockey, beating the previous record of 252 hours, which was set in, which was set in Buffalo, New York in 2021. The event raised nearly $1 million for the Alberta Children's Hospital Foundation. So it was for a good cause.
Yeah.
Randy, do you ever watch hockey?
Yes, for that. With that being said, yes, that makes a lot of sense. It's for basically charity.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can't imagine watching that much hockey, let alone playing that much. I mean, if you love the game that much and you can have...
I'd rather watch a hockey game in person because the energy is crazy there. It's a lot of fun than watch it on TV.
That's true. I mean, it can be a social experience, to say the least. Oh, goodness. The video feed is completely kind of crapped out on me here. Darn it. All right, whatever. Yeah, sorry, my capture card is completely given out. I don't know, I may need to replace it pretty soon. Anyway, all right. But yeah, that's the last thing, at least that's the last thing that I was going to say on it, is like, I can't imagine going that long, but as long as it's for a good cause. Raina, is there anything else you want to say about this? And then we can move forward.
The fact that it's for charity makes a lot of sense. Would I watch a hockey game for that long? No. Hockey games are rowdy. I love them though. Like, it's so much fun. Like, when I'm out here and I go to a Kings game, love it. And it's like tradition to like get out, drive
Sacramento, right?
We'll drive down to the train station, hop on the train to go to a Kings game, and just have
that's Sacramento, fun. Right?
Yes.
I think
it is.
It's Sacramento or LA?
No, it's LA. I think it's LA Kings.
Sorry. Yeah. Thanks so much for tuning in. Those of you who were able to catch us live, and don't forget to like and subscribe. Hopefully by Friday, we'll get things up and running again properly. And don't forget, we'll also be putting out the audio version of what we can salvage from this on all our major podcast platforms. And check us out on TikTok as well at Weekend Showcase. Thanks so much for tuning in. And Raina, thank you for joining us as
well. Thank you. I'm sorry for being...
Everybody have a great week. Be safe, and showcase you later. Good night.
Bye.